occupation to vocation. Moving from occupation to vocation. And that link is not exactly clear, so you're going to have to pay attention. Moving from occupation to vocation. There's a lot going on in this story. Just like the man who was possessed by many demons, there's all sorts of things happening that are really easy to miss. This is one of those little moments, one of these little gospel stories that has so much to it. We could go in 1,000 different directions. One thing to notice is where it takes place. So Jesus gets in a boat from Galilee, where he's been living and doing his ministry, and he crosses the Lake of Galilee, the Sea of Galilee, to the other side, to where the Gentiles live, to where they do things like herd pigs. We today might say this is the wrong side of the tracks, right? This is where good, faithful, holy people really don't go. There are pigs, there are people living in tombs, there's all kinds of unspeakable things. Why don't we just stay on our side? But Jesus finds himself on the wrong side of the lake, and who rushes to greet him? Before he can even step foot on the land, before he can even go and do whatever it was he planned to do, he meets someone who is on the outside of the outside. This man possessed by demons, who's been kicked out of the town, who's living near the pigs, sleeping in the tomb. This is the dirtiest, uncleanest, nastiest person that any holy person in nice robes might expect to meet on the street. A good, holy, religious person would say, "Get away from me. I want nothing to do with you. You'll make me unclean." But is that the way of Jesus? Never. Jesus heals him. So he's possessed by demons. Now, we don't talk much about this, do we? Does anybody talk about it? I hope, maybe not. Demon possession is not big these days. There are a lot of scholars who think what may have been going on is mental illness, right? We could see that. Here is a man who is possessed by mental illness. We don't know what it is, but something has taken over his mind, his personality. It's causing him to be violent. It's causing him to do behaviors that are antisocial, that are harming the people around him. And his community has tried to help him. They've tried to surround him with love and care. They've tried to protect him from himself, but they just can't. And so they've cast him out to the sides. Now, whether it's a demon or a mental illness or if those are the same, whatever it is, something has so occupied this man that he can't function in society. He can't live as the person that he's been created to be. And he's suffering because of it. And he thinks Jesus has come to give him an even more hard time. A religious person coming to him to make things even worse. So here he is, possessed. The name of the demon is interesting too. Legion. Legion is plural, right? We are many, is what the demon ends up saying. Now, there's a double meaning to legion that the hearers of this story in the first century would have been very aware of. A legion is a unit of the Roman army, 6,000 soldiers. And all throughout this era, the Roman army had taken up root. There were Roman soldiers in all the towns and the villages, keeping the peace, enforcing the rule, keeping the people from living as they would want to live. It was a very tense political time, a time where there was a lot of pressure from these invading soldiers, and the tendency always of the people to rise up against their oppressors. So when the man says the demon is legion, can you imagine what the people would have thought? They would have thought immediately of the Roman army that's occupying their town. They would have thought of how oppressive those soldiers are, how mean and how vicious and how violent they could be as they were keeping the peace. I'm sure they would have loved to cast them out into some pigs and drown them in the lake. So there's a double meaning here to the name of the demon. But what it makes me think of is that whether he meant it to be political or not, whatever's going on with this man, whatever demon has possessed him, it hasn't just taken over him. It's occupied him, right? Like a foreign horde of soldiers has taken up root in his mind, taken up root in his body, in his person. He's no longer himself. He's occupied by this horde of soldiers, by this demon, by whatever it is that's oppressing him and keeping him down. He's under occupation. There it is, right? Occupation to vocation. What occupies your mind? What occupies your heart and your soul in your life? Maybe it's mental illness. I'm sure we all know people who have seen occupied, as if a whole horde of soldiers were taking root in their mind, in their bodies. Or maybe it's addiction, or maybe it's pain, or maybe it's pursuit of money or of wealth, of a job, maybe it's your kids, maybe it's longing for the way things used to be, maybe it's some deep pain that you've never even shared with another person. So many of us are occupied. Something else has taken root in us that prevents us from being who it is that God has created us to be, from doing what God has created us to do. Do you live occupied by a foreign force? Is there an invading army in your life keeping you down, leading you to things that you know just aren't you? Or do you know somebody like that? There's a young man at Trinity that I've gotten to know pretty well. His name is John. When John came to Trinity Lutheran College, he was occupied. He was an athlete, and he came to play soccer, and he was going to be the best. And he was going to study business, and he was going to make more money than anybody had ever made before. And those two pursuits drove him. Athletics and business. And so he put everything he had into those things. And he would tell you today that they occupied his mind, his body, his whole life, to the point where he wasn't actually very nice. John was not a good team member because he wanted to be the best, and he didn't care who he stepped on or who he elbowed along the way. And he was so focused on making money, getting a job, that schoolwork, the other things, they weren't as important. Got himself in a little bit of trouble, and it got to the point where his occupation with these things was threatening to drive him out from our community. They tried to surround him with love, they tried to help and coach him, but finally it got to the point where our president said, John, you got to shape up or ship out. This is the last chance. Now, John had not come from a Christian background and was kind of new to the area, but that ultimatum made sense. You're on your last chance. Change or not quite the tunes, but you're out of town, kid, right? Well, John came back. Turned his life around. He knew he got it. It clicked. He's not dumb. He figured out that he needed to do something different. But what happened when he came back surprised him. As I said, he didn't grow up in a Christian house or live in a Christian community, and he was shocked that when he came back with a different attitude, that the community surrounded him with love. The same people who he had been kind of mean to. The people that he had hurt, even our college president, who had said, shape up or ship out. surrounded him with love and with care, and welcomed him right back into this community. He didn't quite know what to make of it until in the January term, he took a class on the book of Galatians. Reading the book of Galatians opened up something in his mind. I don't know what it was exactly, but all of a sudden, things started to make sense for John. He understood about forgiveness in a way that he'd never understood before. He understood about freedom and how Christ has come to free us from our own oppression, to free us from ourselves, to break the chains asunder, as we heard in our song this morning. Something opened up in John through this book of Galatians that changed the whole way that he thought about his life and about what had been going on. And he realized that what he had experienced in the community was in fact a community of Christians seeking to live out that forgiveness, that freedom, that reconciliation, and they do it because of Jesus. What he'd experienced in the community made sense as he studied the Bible. Changed his life. Now, I don't know if John would say it was an encounter with Jesus. I don't know if John will ever call himself a Christian. It doesn't really matter. But something happened. And I would say Jesus showed up in John's life through the community, through the word of the Bible, and it healed him. It freed him from that oppression, from that occupation with sports, with making money, when he realized that there were people who lived differently. People who lived from these values of freedom, these values of forgiveness, these values of loving people back into wholeness. The kind of people who would cross a lake to the other side to welcome someone who was struggling. The kind of people who follow Jesus and seek to live and work and heal as he did. John had a life change and found a calling, found a vocation to serve others, recognizing that it didn't matter how much he got, but instead how much he gave away. Isn't that the message of Jesus in a nutshell? To live not for ourselves, but because of him, to live for the sake of others? The oppressive army, the occupation, marched right out of his head and down the lake. No pigs had to die, thankfully, for this young man. But it was gone. And instead, he was sent on a new mission with a vocation and a calling to serve not his own needs, but to serve the needs of others. It's an amazing story, just like the story of this demon-possessed man. I get to hear stories like this all the time. This is my favorite thing about my job, is I get to hear these stories. I get to see students enter college in one way and leave in another. I get to be a part of the lives of these young men and women, and not so young men and women, who come and open themselves up to be changed. Isn't that what education is about? To open yourself up to a new experience, to a new way of thinking, the opportunity for God to do a new thing, to heal us, to change us, to call us, send us. There's two kind of stories that I tend to hear around vocation with my students. When they seek to find what it is that they're going to devote their lives to, right? And students wonder this these days. It's rare to hear, how am I going to get the best job that will pay the most? Most of the young people that I hear, they say, how can I use what I've been given and make the most difference in the world? That's inspirational to start with. But when they start to reflect on this and when they find their callings, and check this with your own experience, because I want to know if this is true for you too. There's two stories. And one is the story of, you know what I didn't have in my life was? What I didn't have in my life was a father. So I'm going to be the best father for my kids. You heard that story before? What I didn't have in my life was a teacher who believed in me. So I'm going to be a teacher, and I'm going to inspire other students. You heard that story? That's story one. Story two is, at a really critical point in my life, somebody showed up and made a big difference. You heard that story? This is the kid who says, when I was in trouble in middle school, the boys' club saved my life. And so now I'm going to devote myself to inner city. Or there was a teacher who gave me a gift of learning. Or a pastor said a kind word to me. These two stories are both present in this story of the man possessed by demons. A man who suffers, who's in pain, who's cast out. And Jesus shows up just at the right time and heals him. Now his request to Jesus is perfectly natural. Jesus, I want to follow you. Can I get in the boat with you and go back to where you come from? That's what we hope for, right? As we're trying to bring people along, we want followers of Jesus. But Jesus, interestingly enough, doesn't let him come along. This is the most fascinating thing about this whole story to me. Not the demons, not the pigs, not the breaking chains. Why does Jesus, who's trying to build a group of followers, tell this man to go home? See, his calling was not merely to sit at Jesus' feet, but to take the good news of what had been done for him and go back into his community, back among his people, the very people who had kicked him out for his problems, to take that pain, to take that deep sadness, that deep loneliness, and turn it around, just as his life had been turned around, so that others could know, so that his community could know, so that he could bear witness to all that Jesus had done for him. Turning his occupation, that which had possessed and controlled and nearly destroyed him, turning that occupation into a vocation, into a holy calling, turning that pain, not hiding it or stuffing it or ignoring it or letting it destroy it, but bringing it out, allowing Jesus to heal it, and then welcoming the call to be sent back home to share that good news. What's your occupation? What has occupied you for a short while or a long while? Is Jesus inviting you to open yourself up to his healing? To let that army march down the bank and into the lake? And if he does, where might he send you? To others who suffer as you have suffered. To others who are still trapped, still occupied. Or maybe back to those very people who did you harm. To bear witness to the good news of Jesus. That power that crosses to the wrong side of the lake, to the wrong side of the track, to do amazing, surprising things. I can't wait to see where John and these other students go. And like the man in the story, we don't always get to know what happens. But we know that they go out into the world transformed by Jesus, sent to bring good news, to bear witness wherever they go, to turn their occupation into a vocation, Wouldn't it be great if our churches and our schools and our homes could be places where this happens, where we welcome in those unlike us, unclean, broken, and are willing to admit that we are occupied too. Willing to admit that we suffer, that we are broken, that we hold to things that aren't helping us. And together allow that power of Jesus to march those armies down off the road. Could we be places where occupation becomes vocation? I think that's the call of Christian community. And I've seen it work again and again. I've seen it transform people. And thanks be to God, no pigs have to die. We'll stand and sing our hymn, which is in your bulletin, ELW number 841.